currently offering teletherapy sessions and an online support group to help navigate the emotional aspects of these difficult times. Kevin Elliott Counseling has locations near downtown Champaign, close to Campus Town, in Lincoln Square Mall, and in Tuscola. More information is available online at kevinelliottcounseling.com or by phone at 217-398-9066. And now stay tuned for this week's episode of Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Janice Weinstein, Director of Total Link to Community, a family cooperative for adults with disabilities in the Chicago area. But first, disability news for the week of December 28, 2020. Zappos is expanding a first of its kind program designed to make it easier for people with special needs to buy shoes. The online retailer said it is growing its so-called single and different size shoes program because of overwhelming customer demand. The program, which began in July as a pilot, allows customers to buy just one shoe or purchase a pair of shoes that include two different sizes. It's part of Zappos Adaptive, a broader effort that launched in 2017 to offer a collection of clothing and footwear to meet the needs of people with various disabilities. Zappos said it has seen searches for single shoes balloon on its website since the new program began over the summer, with styles from mainstream designers. The program offerings have grown by 86%, the company said. Single shoes are available in toddler through adult sizes and at a range of widths. The Me Too and Black Lives Matter movements have forced Hollywood and other artists and filmmakers to rethink their subject matter and casting practices. However, despite an increased sensitivity to gender and race representation in popular culture, Americans with disabilities have not yet had their national movement, according to advocates. Disability drag, which is what they call casting able-bodied actors in the roles of characters with disabilities, has been hard to remove from its Oscar-worthy appeal. Since 1947, out of 59 nominations for disabled characters, 27 won an Academy Award, about a 50% win rate. There's Eddie Redmayne's performance as Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything, Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of Christy Brown, who has cerebral palsy in My Left Foot, and Dustin Hoffman's role as an autistic genius in Rain Man, so to mention just a few. In recent years, however, there's been a shift. Actors with disabilities are actually being cast as characters who have disabilities. In 2017, theater director Sam Gold cast actress Madison Ferris, who uses a wheelchair in real life, as Laura in his Broadway revival of Tennessee Williams' The Glass Menagerie. On TV and in movies, actors with disabilities are also being cast in roles of characters with disabilities. Despite these developments, representation, what characters these actors play, remains mostly unaddressed. The majority of characters with disabilities, whether they're played by actors with disabilities or not, continue to represent the same outdated tropes. According to Magda Romanska, journalist for Salon.com, typically disabled characters are limited to four types: characters who have magical qualities, characters who are evil, characters who are redemptive, meaning the person with a disability either commits suicide or is killed, and finally, characters who are inspirational. Romanaka challenges writers and filmmakers to broaden their view of disability and expand opportunities for all actors in providing accurate portrayals. After months of hardship and danger from the COVID-19 pandemic and relentless advocacy from advocates across the country, President Trump signed a COVID-19 relief package without critical funding for people with disabilities to access the services and supports necessary for a life in the community. According to Peter Burns, director of the ARC of the U.S., as COVID-19 continues to spread nationwide, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are struggling to access the services they need to continue to live in the community, and their families struggle with balancing work and caregiving responsibilities. Burns expressed frustration, saying that Congress should have allocated desperately needed funds to support home and community-based services, but they fell short. They also failed to provide funding for personal protective equipment, PPE, and resources for the workforce that has supported people with disabilities tirelessly throughout the pandemic. Congress extended tax credits available for businesses to cover paid leave, but eliminated rules about when businesses must provide leave and did not extend the tax credits to cover all caregivers as the pandemic continues. Said Burns, quote, "It is unconscionable that Congress ignored the dire need of people with disabilities, their support staff, and families as this pandemic rages across the country. For months, our leaders have known the consequences of their inaction. People with disabilities are getting infected at higher rates. Support staff are putting their lives on the line day in and day out with the protection they need, without the protection they need, and families are struggling with it all. Yet in the waning days of 2020, they have shut us out in the cold in COVID-19 relief legislation," end quote. Through the ARC, almost 150,000 calls and emails have flooded Congress in recent months to demand action for funding critical services, along with the PPE needed by staff to safely deliver these services to people. Chapters of the ARC across the country have been scrambling throughout the pandemic to access PPE and other medical supplies. They need resources to cover those costs and funding to pay their direct support professionals fairly for the vital work they do. According to Burns, quote, "This is not hyperbole. This is life and death for people with disabilities and their support systems. Before, during, and someday after the pandemic, a life in the community is what people with disabilities want. Congress turned its back on desperately needed funds to support these services, protect the staff doing the work, and pay them for the risks they are taking in this public health crisis," end quote. And finally, Southern Illinois University in Carbondale was included among the top 20 wheelchair-friendly colleges recently by New Mobility Magazine and the United Spinal Association. According to Lisa Keringer, Director of Disability Support Services at UIC, quote, "Their ranking method is more rigorous than that of many other lists of this type, so this is a real feather in our cap. SIU has long enjoyed a reputation for excellence in access for wheelchair users. We were an early leader in removing physical barriers and assisting disabled college students who have been traditionally marginalized," end quote. In the report, Jean Dobbs, project director for Top 20 Wheelchair-Friendly Colleges, praised SIU's culture. She wrote, quote, "The culture of inclusion can be extremely different at different institutions. We wanted to find those gems, those schools that really go above and beyond to say, your wheelchair is welcome here, your service dog is welcome here, and you are welcome here," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Just a little bit.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by Janice Weinstein, who is a director and parent and a person who's been involved with a family cooperative up there in Chicago for a number of years now. They have done some really creative things and really are very community-based. I'm very excited to have Janice on the program. Welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Why don't we start? I know you've been on the program before, but you never know who's listening who hasn't heard you. So if you could start just by introducing yourself and maybe give a little bit of history of Total Link to Community and why it was started.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the first thing I would like to say is that I'm very involved with Total Link, but I'm no longer the director.
So oh, okay. Well, my apologies.
Yeah, that's okay. We have a wonderful executive director, Emily Raining, who's been with us since we started our work in customized employment.
I actually know Emily quite well, too. So that is a good fit.
Yeah. It is. It's a great fit. So I just wanted to, you know, share that with you. So I'm one of six families that founded Total Link to Community. And we're all involved parents who have children that live in the north suburbs of Chicago in Northbrook and Glenview. And we came together because we were thinking about the future for our kids. We wanted to put our head and our hearts together to try to come up with creative ways to help our children to remain included in their communities when they finish their public school education.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how we came together, and we met you. I think Joan Martin knew you, Vicki, because she looked into microboards.
Mm-hmm.
But we came together as a cooperative with training under the Illinois Council, programs with microboard and cooperative training, and mm-hmm. went through that training with you all many years ago. Boy, how many years ago was that?
I think it's got to be at least 12 years ago, maybe bit more than that.
Maybe. So initially, we were just a kind of a diverse group of moms who sat around Joan's dining room table wondering what we should do. And we started with some social programs while we went on to live our other lives. And I was in graduate school at the time, getting my doctorate degree in clinical psychology. And I think it was just a serendipitous moment for us that as I was finishing up school, I applied for funding for employment, and we received a grant from the council that really launched our work as a service provider in our area. So
you went from no funding at all to a big grant from the Illinois Council? Is that the way mm-hmm. it worked? That's amazing, because as I understand it was a fairly hefty grant.
It was an amazing opportunity for us. It was a partnership with Griffin Hammes Associates, and Marcy Frawley was was the lead consultant from Griffin Hammes, who worked with us. She's wonderful. And so I think this one of the things that was so great about the project is that it was a 3.5 year project that actually stretched into more than a 4 year project for us. So during that time, Emily and I really were boots on the ground, using the strategies and principles of customized employment to create outcomes in partnership with Griffin Hammes and also with the North Suburban Special Education Cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
So NSSED is part of the education system up here, and we partnered with them to help connect with families who had young adults that were getting ready to graduate from transition, to help them create employment opportunities in the community that would they'd be able to sustain when they left the school system. Mm-hmm. So that's really what launched us, and we eventually became a 501c3. So, you know, jump forward to today, we are a provider with Department of Rehabilitative Services. We have a supported employment contract with DRS, as well as we're part of a customized employment pilot project with DRS. So employment has always been a foundation of what we do. We kind of approached inclusion for young adults with the priority being, you know, employment out in the community and then building a life, a meaningful life around employment. And we provide, you know, some coaching to people who have specific and unique educational needs to mm-hmm. learn certain things. We have a lot of educational programs and social programs, and like I said, employment is a big part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily has been very successful in launching some of our programs in a virtual format with Zoom.
Of course.
Yeah, and we started to do that shortly after we wanted to shut down in March, and those programs have been going on since March.
How many people ended up getting jobs through Totaling to Community?
Over the years, I don't know the exact number, but I want to say it's probably about 150 people.
Oh my gosh. That's a huge number.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been doing this work now for 9 years. We've, you know, every year we take on a certain number of cases with our DRS contract, and you know, it's a one person at a time approach, and though it may feel like it's a slow process, we've seen the benefits of using this approach because it really allows us to help people find their strengths and the strategies that help them to be successful in the workplace. And then a big key, I believe, at least from my point of view as a psychologist and as a parent, is really involving families so that they know how that they can continue to support their young adults when they leave the school system. So that was a big part of, I think, the success that that our young adults have been part of it with us, because we're partners with them and with their parents.
And I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. With all of these folks that have been working real jobs in community, what happened in March? How many people are still working at this point?
You know, quite a few people are not working. Mm-hmm. So I would say, my guess is that about 85% of people are not working. And the reason... there are many reasons. One of the main reasons is that people are making a choice not to work because they don't want to risk becoming ill. So, you know, in my daughter's case, she has Down syndrome, and we know that she has other issues, respiratory, you know, a history of pneumonia and respiratory issues, and so she's. You know, we've decided it's just not worth the risk for her to work. And I think, so that's one reason, you know, the health issues.
Of course.
Another is that smaller employers are not able to sustain their businesses. And so they maybe had to let people go.
Maybe even shut down their businesses, I would assume,
exactly,
too.
Or they've even shut down their businesses. And then on the other end of the continuum, we have frontline workers who are working in grocery stores and working a lot of hours that have been able to keep themselves safe and healthy. And I think a couple of individuals who are working in a daycare kind of situation, at least temporarily. I'm not sure where they all are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think a lot of people are not working. A lot of the people that we've placed are not working.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the case with my daughter as well. You know, she just, and fortunately, the daycare center where she works basically said to her, anytime you want to come back,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're welcome to come back, but just she just doesn't feel safe to do that at this point.
Yeah.
So I get that. Does it feel like you're going to, after placing so many people in jobs that they love, that when this is all said and done, and hopefully it's soon, that you're going to be starting from square one again?
Probably with some people we will. We've already had some parents reach out to us saying that, you know, they'd like to find a different type of work for their son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would say we're going completely all the way back to scratch, because we do, people who have been successful working have work experience that they can use in their favor when they go back out to look for another job. And we actually do have some people who have been placed during this whole thing as well. So Emily was just sharing with me earlier this week that one young man who had lost his job with a small employer was just recently hired in another job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working in a small retail business, and this happened during COVID. So, you know, I think there are people who are willing to work, but they may not want to work, you know, in jobs where the risk is higher.
Right.
So I think it can be done. The principles of customized employment, I think, will do well when we're through this. They'll continue to be reliable, and we may see people in different types of jobs, just like we are seeing with the rest of the workforce. So I feel confident that we're going to be able to place people.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds like you have a really, really strong foundation to start with, which is going to help guide you through the difficult situations that are going on right now. So how are you using Zoom for people during this time?
Well, you know, we have adapted different types of programs for the Zoom, for the Zoom format.
Mm-hmm.
So today, for instance, Joan, who is one of our founding family members, ran something called Game Time. So some of our young adults are playing a few different games on Zoom. They're playing bingo. They're playing games that they're selecting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to use feedback from our participants in these programs and trying new things. So I think that has been really successful, being collaborative and finding out from our young adults and adults what kinds of things they might enjoy, and then being willing to try a few different things has really helped. I think one thing that was really tremendous was that we were able to use funding that we received from the Arc of Illinois to pilot a wide range of different programs over the summer. So our employment specialists who were not able to, do their work as in employment were able to help us run a few different programs throughout the week. And so that experience helped us to see what things people enjoyed and what kind of support they might need.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at having things, visuals that support interaction and helping people to just even our young adults to navigate where should they be in their house when they're doing Zoom, you know, and finding out that whoever is in the room with you while you're participating is we can also hear them and we can also see you. So you're inviting us into your house and into your private space when you're participating on Zoom. So for some people, Zoom has been a wonderful opportunity to be social without some of the other distractions or anxieties or worries that might have kept them from participating in things, you know, out in the community. So
In fact, I was going to ask that very question. What positive things have come from this little switch up in your services? Well, one thing I can hear from you is that people are participating and learning a different way by doing things via Zoom. But the fact that you have plans to jump right in as soon as people have the opportunity to do that is a really important thing. So what about the future for Total Link to Community? Is the focus going to continue to be only mainly the social, well, certainly employment for sure, but you have as a contingent on that the social activities as well, especially with the Zoom. And I know that because I get your newsletters and so forth, that you have different kinds of social activities during the course of the year anyway.
So, yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a little soon to say exactly how things will look, but we have been going through some strategic planning discussions, and I think that our future will be focused on broadly on the mission statement. So the mission is really to provide opportunities for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to be part of their community through employment, through social connections, and through lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. So I think we can adapt those three key areas, employment, lifelong learning, and social connections, in a wide range of settings. So we, you know, see ourselves working in tandem with other sister organizations in our area. We have a lot of other wonderful organizations that have been started and spearheaded similar to Community Choices and Total Link to Community by parents.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are focused on housing. Some of them are focused on day services during the day that are flexible. And we see ourselves growing and changing in partnership with our young adults. So I know that's kind of a vague answer, but I think the core things that we do will always be the same. And I think those core things are partnering with young adults to help them continue discovering what they're good at, helping them to identify the types of supports that they need to reach their goals, and expanding on that with lifelong learning opportunities. So that means partnerships with our libraries, with other organizations, with volunteers. And so I think, you know, the future will look different, but it will always be focused on partnership and using evidence-based practices like customized employment to help people achieve their goals and their, you know, and their hopes and their dreams. So
They're all important stuff, and I appreciate the work that you do. If people want more information about Total Link to Community, where should they go? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we have a website. It's www.totallink2.org. So that's our website. Mm-hmm. And then I'm happy to take emails if people would like to email me. My email address is jweinstein@totallink2.org. And my last name is spelled W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, at www.totalshoes.org.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Janice. Janice Weinstein of Total Link to Community. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki.